Well, in the first half, I have a question. Who's the winner in this group of super winners? Male, female, hypothetical. You guys can listen and answer along. Also, lots of racism talk with all kinds of crazy stories and some hot Casey Anthony thoughts as well. We'll do that right after this.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. And welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. The most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight. This is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy. It's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us. We don't do interviews. We do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill. We drink. We play games. We have the song of the week. We have the creative curse word of the week. As long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Tia Carrera. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, Thimble Rigger, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling friends. Love that about you, right, Gina Grad? No, get your mic heated up.
That's right.
I know what you're going to say. And Bald Brian?
Just because you're loud doesn't make you right.
Oh, yeah. There is our late-night preacher.
Oh, my
preacher
God.
Preacher Gene Scott. Wearing
six eyes over there.
He's wearing Porsche sunglasses. Then he's got the reading glasses hanging over them. And he's not wearing the pith helmet in that one. He's just wearing, he wears a crazy hat, smokes a cigar.
Yeah, he is chewing a stogie.
That's later. Mm-hmm. That's
as
later,
God wants it.
That's his later years when he became, he relied on the glasses for reading.
Right.
We make fun of this guy, but I hope I get to the place where I'm just smoking on a sound stage with two sets, maybe three pair of glasses, just screaming at people while sitting down.
You're close.
You could have contacts.
My grandfather kind of looks like this guy. He had those flip up shades.
Oh yeah. Like outfielders.
Yeah.
He don't know a bass. What were his other things? He don't know bass drum from a pipe organ. He's a no good low down thimble rigger, and he had to have a few more. Those are the ones I recall. But anyway,
he's fire and brimstone.
Mm. He shall be missed. All right, I have a winner couple. Male, female, they're not necessarily together, but they're both huge winners.
Okay.
But I want to know who the bigger winner is out of these two.
Okay.
All right? And you'll have to show your work.
Okay.
I'll need to see how you solve this math equation.
All right. Got my pen.
First winner woman. Saw her today. The one who not only jogs down PCH, the people that have to find very public places for you to watch them exercise while you're sitting in your internal combustion vehicle with your seat heater on, and they know you're watching.
Right.
It's not enough that they just jog in front of you. The woman who stops after the jog is sort of half bent over, breathing hard and checking her watch.
Yeah. Mm.
Not only is she exercising, but she's doing it to the point where she's checking her miles per minute and her heart rate and I get it. I don't know why you need so much information. Go out, break a sweat, hit the trail. You don't have to stop every 100 yards and check your pulse rate, but that woman gets it done.
Yeah.
She's running.
She's got a mission to fulfill.
And she's checking that watch.
She's a winner in more than one way because she could be checking health data. She has a metric to reach, certain heartbeat per minute.
This is good.
Or email, text. Yes. Like, I'm the clock. You know what I mean? Like,
she's working.
Yeah, I'm earning right now.
Yeah, she could be doing either. I got the impression she was checking her heart rate or something because she's sort of bent over, breathing hard. It's like she sprinted the last quarter mile of her jog and she's going to see what she got
Once
her rate
analytics.
Up to.
Yeah.
that chick or dude with the pickup truck that's also going down PCH, and he has the special rack for the hydro board, the fan and the motor, and that guy's going to pull up at Zuma.
Shit.
All you schlubs are heading into work to go work for the man and punch the clock. Not this cat. He's got a special rack, and he's taking that thing, and he's going to be hydroplaning over the open sea in a matter of minutes.
The worst case scenario for that guy is that's his business, and he rents that out during the day. That's still a sweet life. It's like, I got this thing, use it, and then I'll use it.
Yeah.
Who's the bigger winner in this equation?
I have thoughts, and
who
I can show my
work. Who do we
want
to hire?
Well, that's a different story.
Okay.
I'd rather hire the jogger. The bigger winner's the dude.
Mm-hmm.
Because the jogger, she's a little bit OCD, and she's probably a little bit tortured, and she'll bring that to work with her.
Yes.
And I can use that. Who's the bigger winner is the dude, because there are very, very few places in this country, nay, in this world, where it makes sense that you could drive around with something that is built specifically for an open body of water.
Yeah, and the foil board, it's called.
And that costs money.
It's true, because when I go down PCH, I used to marvel at these same people. The landlocked version of this is, you pull into a Starbucks and there's 18 people just sitting there, and it's 11 o'clock and it's a Thursday, and I don't know where you're going or where you're supposed to be. I don't know how you financially swung this one. I don't know what your partner thinks of it, but here you are in Sherman Oaks without a care in the world, not checking your clock, not antsy waiting in line because you got to hustle it back to the office. Just, here we are.
Yep.
I got my computer. I'm not going anywhere. There is, but I'm not so sure those people are winners. They could be unemployable.
True.
Yeah.
And when I drive down PCH, I marvel, especially on a weekday at 9:15 in the morning, there is a gaggle of guys sitting on longboards just out.
Waiting for a wave.
Just, there's 26 guys. They're all sitting on a longboard.
They're all at a cove.
They're all just sitting there, floating around, waiting for the next swell. And I'm like, what day is it?
Yeah.
Where do you have to be? How did you work this thing out where you don't have to be anywhere? But you're not necessarily successful.
It's true. Oh, it's 100% true.
But they're the same guy that'd be like, well, that depends what success is, man.
That's right. Yeah. If you're interviewing Bodie, who was...
You mean from Point Break?
From Point Break. He's got a different take on
some
success.
Some guy snort for it, jab a bane for it. All you got to do is jump.
That's right.
I love that movie.
I'm so glad you know all the dialogue from that movie. The foil board guy, the foil board is 10 grand.
Yeah,
the rack's 1500 and the truck's 47.5. So that guy's done something.
Yeah.
He's figured something out. He's not out just floating in a stew of his own juices with the other longboard losers. He figured it out, and he has all in with the truck and the rack and the foil board. He's got 60 grand laying around to invest in his not going to work on a Tuesday at 9:15 in the morning.
Yeah. I think this decision's been made.
This is a tough one. There's a chance, a small chance, but it needs to be mentioned that, excuse me, that foil board guy could be the employee. Do you know what I mean? He could be like the guy who goes out there and does the rentals for whatever it is.
I'm seeing one foil board, and I'm not seeing any magnetic signs on the side of the pickup truck. This dude,
this is his life.
He's not wearing a shirt with something emblazoned on the breast about the company, you know, Zoom Life or something on it. I think that's his board, that's his truck, that's his life.
What are the chances this guy trucks in from some horrible place like Reseda? You know what I mean? Or versus the jogger, that's a fucking local.
True. Yeah. What the plates say?
I don't know.
They can't be from, that would be insane to live in the Inland Empire and have that.
I don't know if you can pull this off. Like, if you're in Reseda, you're married, you got a couple of kids, you got a mortgage. Look, they're both winners.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no splitting hairs.
There's no doubt.
I can answer one of the questions as to why are these guys sitting on their surfboards and how do they afford it? On the dinner cruise, because I don't know if you guys heard, I went to Maui.
Oh.
And all the waiters, quote unquote, were like, yeah, here's my dad, here's that. And they're all like long hair and just kind of scruffy, living their life. And I asked, like, so this is what you do for work. Like, What do you do for fun? They all had one answer. Toe surfing.
Toe surfing?
Where they get towed up the waves.
Oh, toe surfing. Yeah. Oh, man, that's so the craziest
at night,
surfing.
They do dinner cruises because they still get to be on the water, and that's kind of what they like, yeah. And during the day they surf.
Plenty of the employees out there will construct their life around early morning surf sessions.
Yes.
All right. Let's switch gears to something that seems to be going. Man, there's just been an avalanche of we got some Casey Anthony updates, but a lot of race-related stuff going down as I was watching my entertainment shows last night. There was the kerfuffle at Buckingham Palace.
What?
I don't know about this.
Oh, yeah. There was it was all over the entertainment shows. There's a 80 – and probably could have found it over on CNN, too. There was a 83-year-old I don't know, whatever the title was over there. But
Duke, Duchess.
Yes, yeah, something.
Lord.
She was a lady.
She's a lady.
There we go. Close.
Yeah. And she got in all kinds of trouble, and now she's had to resign.
Oh, boy.
But here's the story.
Prince William's godmother resigns honorary royal role after allegation of racism. Buckingham Palace said Wednesday that an honorary member of the household has resigned after making, quote, unacceptable and deeply regrettable comments to a black guest. The individual confirmed, would like to express her profound apologies for the hurt caused and has stepped aside from her honorary role with immediate effect, the palace said.
You know what the problem with the racist allegations? Everybody has to denounce you, like Harry and the sons, and everyone has to get distance and they have to go, she's not my godmother.
Right. I haven't seen her in years.
I disapprove of this. Somebody kills somebody, you can still stand by them?
Yeah.
You can kind of go, hey, that was self-defense, or I know Johnny would have never done that. That's not my son,
right.
You know, whatever. Racism, pow. You're like, you're on an island. You're out on that Ziffy board alone in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mandu Reid, the leader of the British Women's Equality Party, who witnessed the exchange on Thursday, identified the person as 83-year-old Lady Susan Hussey, Prince William's godmother, and lady-in-waiting for the late Queen Elizabeth II. Gozi Fulani, the head of Sista Space,
that's not a real name,
a charity that supports victims of domestic abuse, alleged in a tweet that the household member repeatedly pressed her for information about her nationality. In a statement, Buckingham Palace said it took this incident, quote, extremely seriously, adding that it had investigated immediately to establish the full details.
Well,
that's the racism?
The good news is, if this is racism, then we've come a long way. There's, you know, in the 50s, if you open a newspaper and there was some racism going on, somebody had a dog suck or sicked on them. Somebody was lynched. Somebody was something horrible, firebombed, you know, something, a black church or something like that.
I'm interested in knowing more about you.
Quite. Do you have any Grey Poupon in Africa? Yes.
The statement did not identify Hussey. The palace had reached out to Ngozi Fulani on this matter, and are inviting her to discuss all elements of her experience in person if she wishes. She said in a radio interview, though, she has not been contacted. All members of the household are being reminded of the diversity and inclusivity policies which they are required to uphold at all times, the palace added. In a tweet on Wednesday, Sista Space thanked everyone for their support and explained that the organization did not want to name the person involved.
Okay.
It is the system that needs to be revised, the organization said. Yes, the person was offensive, but it serves no purpose to name and shame her. It would make us just as bad. We prefer that this be handled kindly.
Yeah, so the person who was the recipient of the questions from the elderly woman, I don't know. I think it's in there somewhere, but she was hurt. She was injured. She was devastated.
She found it traumatic.
So she was traumatized.
Yeah.
Now, we can show you some other pictures of the woman who was traumatized.
Well, and she also, where this all stemmed from is she tweeted out a picture of herself and then she transcribed the exchange from memory. So Gina and I could do a table read.
Oh, yeah. It'll be just like you were there.
So let's Gina will be Lady Hussy, and I'll obviously be Ngozi.
Okay.
Mm, you don't find that problematic?
Wow. that I'm playing Ngozi?
At least he's
you,
a person of color.
A questionable Asian descent.
Questionable?
Well, not that we don't believe he's Asian. It's the
right.
type
no
that
right.
we're
yeah.
kind of talking
about. The type.
The type we're talking about.
Gina and I have the girliest voices in the
okay, yeah. here we go.
It's the two of us. Where are you from?
Sister Space.
Oh, no. Where do you come from?
We're based in Hackney.
No. What part of Africa are you from?
I don't know. They didn't leave any records.
Well, you must know where you're from. I spent time in France. Where are you from?
Here. UK.
No. But what nationality are you?
I am born here and am British.
No, but where do you really come from? Where do your people come from?
My people? Lady, what is this?
Oh, I can see I'm going to have a challenge getting you to say where you're from. When did you first come here?
Oh, my God.
Lady, I am a British national. My parents came here in the 50s when...
Oh, I knew we'd get there in the end. You're Caribbean.
No, lady, I am of African heritage, Caribbean
descent. Why aren't you
doing
the girl voice?
Yeah, this is weak.
I think that is the girl voice.
It is?
Do you really want me to do it?
We should start over.
It'd be nice.
No, lady. I am of African heritage, Caribbean descent.
Good.
And British nationality.
Oh, so you're from...
End scene.
All right. Well, this is her version of it. But here's what I have...
She did press.
Here's what I have to say about this. There's pictures of her... wearing ceremonial garb with the African flag headband, and she's looking like an extra from that Women Warriors movie.
Oh, sure. The Woman King?
Yeah. She dressed that way. She did this. She said, I shall put on all the garb of my country, and then I'm going to show up at this event, which could be international, and... Don't be surprised if people come up and ask you. She's wearing, you know, her earrings are Africa. Her headband is Africa. Everything about her says this is who I am.
It looks like she's representing a place. So the people are asking, what place are you representing?
Right. Now, this is racism now. But if I'm of Italian descent, if I dress like a fucking gondolier... Or maybe an organ grinder.
Sure.
And I showed up an event in full garb, full gondolier garb. I had the push stick and the hat and everything.
Oh, sash or
the sash.
Push stick.
And I would expect people to come up to me and go, like, what part of Italy are you from?
How dare you?
And then I'd go, I was born in North Hollywood. And they'd go, oh, okay, but then where's your family? Like, what part of Italy is your family from? That would be a perfectly logical question that I would essentially be inviting.
That was what
I'm inviting this. And this is the New World Order, which is you invite this, and then when it doesn't go the way, and by the way, it's an 83-year-old woman who's never left Hounslow. This is going to happen, and then you're going to cry racism, but... Were you looking for it? Were you inviting it? Were you trying to find it? And the person is being inquisitive. Like, I know there's that thing where we go, it is now racist to ask your Uber driver where they're from. Fuck that. I reject that. I've had Uber drivers with accents from all over the world, and I ask them where they hail from, where their family's from, where they're from. Normally, they're excited to talk about
nice
it, and they explain when they came here or what they fled. They usually fled something after
they're
the Ayatollah,
whatever,
something. It's also kind of nice because who knows what they did in their native land. I would like to move somewhere far away one day and drive a cab and then explain to everyone that I was the head of radiology at Johns Hopkins before my family had to flee.
Right.
You know, probably get a little more of a tip.
I think so.
So
at worst, the line of questioning was clumsy.
Yeah.
I think it washed over to racism.
It was naive. And what you could say as the person being asked is, I pick up what you're putting down. Like, I'm British. My heritage is from this. you know.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you're going to dress in, oh, way over the top in the garb of your native land, expect questions. Whatever that, you want to dress like a little Dutch boy.
If you want to dress like anyone from It's a Small World.
Right. Then people are going to ask. And by the way, they're going to assume you want to be asked. Otherwise, you wouldn't. It wouldn't be Halloween every fucking day for you. But anyway, so the press just jumps on it, yeah. Billy Bush. And the problem is nobody can say, she's kind of dressed like a cartoon character. Why wouldn't Tia Carrere or Carrera, we're going to figure it out, she's of Hawaiian descent. Mm-hmm. If she came in here wearing a grass skirt and a couple of coconuts, which I hope she does, she would be inviting us to go, tell us about where you're from and what your culture is like and all that. But anyway, the problem is this is a zero burger, but because Meghan Markle did the racism.
Markle.
Did Amanda Markle's.
Did Imelda.
Imelda. I got too many names in my head. I'm too old. Because she did the whole racist sit down with Oprah, now we have to we've uncovered two zero burgers, which still adds up to zero, but now we got, now there's some meat on that bone. So we have somebody talking to you and you claiming racism, and now a scandal, this old woman coming up and talking to a woman who is dressed like a tribeswoman and asking her about her heritage, which I would argue the ultimate racism is ignoring people because they don't look like you or they're dressed different, kind of just walking past. I mean, engaging in conversation, whether it's the Uber driver or the woman at the Women Empowerment Movement march, I would say that engagement at least shows a level of interest.
Sure.
And there is a punt of an answer. You can say, oh, we've traced our lineage to Kenya. Or, you know, honestly, we don't know. We've tried. Or, oh, I'm not interested. There's a way to kind of kick that can down the road.
Yes. Politely, other than sort of,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm confused. Yeah. What are you talking about? I mean, everybody here has had that, you know, what are you? Oh, I'm Italian. Oh, where's your dad from? Mm. Well, he was in South Philly. Oh, okay. But his parents came over.
Sure.
Right.
And then you explain the small town. And sometimes they'll go, oh, I have a family. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. All right. So anyway, we found racism. We uncovered some more racism, by the way, which is the Jerry Jones picture.
Oh, I saw this.
Yes.
It was making the rounds on NFL Twitter.
Well, that's why I didn't see it.
Yeah.
But to set this up, I have long wondered, Gina, you're familiar, everyone's familiar with just the trope of the, you know, the 19, whatever, 50 something, late 50s or late 60s, the locals who'd be against integrating the schools, screaming at the black kids caught in a black and white photo, you know, yelling at them, throwing something. A lot of those people are still alive. They're grandpas and grandmas. And what happens when grandkid goes, hey, grandma, grandpa, what, is that you? Yeah, a long time ago. Or do you stick to it? Do you live by it and die by it?
Yeah.
Well, he's not front and center in this picture.
He's like, hey, guys, what's going on?
He's sort of off to the side, but somebody dug this thing up.
Yeah, Washington Post just published it in a profile of Jones's poor record of hiring black coaches.
Ew.
Dan Snyder's burning it all down.
And that's a group of 18 white guys and a couple of black folks trying to enter a school, or what were they trying to enter?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's a school in North Little Rock. This is the same day as Little Rock 9.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so.
Well, there's cameras, and they're not like, you know, little cameras. Right. This is like news coverage.
Right.
So, yeah, so this picture's been making the rounds. It's from 1957, Little Rock. And,
I was describing there was one hairstyle in the past.
Yeah.
Every one of these guys either has a flat top or the pomade.
One barber.
One barber. The name is Floyd.
The guy in front looks right out of Central Casting for Bully from the 50s.
Yeah.
With a cigarette.
Yeah, he was someone who would have given Marlon Brando a problem in the 50s.
Yes.
You know, like, we don't like your kind around here.
You shove James Dean around.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is interesting.
Yes, this is North Little Rock High, an attempt to integrate the high school.
So, now, by the way, I don't condone this, but I would have been down with anything that got me out of class.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody said, we're going to go stop black people from coming into North Hollywood High, I'd be like, do we get to leave Mr. Dilibertish biology class? Like, yeah, all right, let's do it. But if they said we're going on an AIDS march, I would have said, whatever
does the march go away from the school?
Whatever involves leaving Mr. Dilibertish class, Sign me
up. You're on board.
I have not seen or heard anything beyond this picture. Has Jerry Jones addressed it? Has he been like, hey, I was just there, Lucky Lou, or whatever?
I mean, he looks like, he looks, I don't know, confused.
He looks,
but he's
there.
Have yeah,
somebody
he's like
said
three
the,
guys back.
The local news station is setting up in front of the front door of the school. Let's go out and see what's going
yeah, naturally
on.
Naturally, you're curious.
It's plausible deniability. Yeah, I could
have
showed
up. And he's
not
looking at the kids. He's looking at the cameras.
I have a quote from Jerry Jones in regards to this photo. He spoke about it after a Cowboys game. I didn't know at the time the monumental event, really, that was going on, and I'm sure glad we're a long way from that. I am. And that would remind me to just continue doing everything we can to not have those kinds of things happen again.
Yeah. I think the playmaker Michael Irvin, we got a couple of sound bites from him chiming in.
So he was on a radio show in Texas, and they asked him about the picture. And so this first clip, this is him talking about the picture, and we have a couple more.
All I can do is tell you what I know about Jerry, and I hear people say a lot of things. But I go by what I know. I know the man to be a righteous man, a very good man, you know. And I see, am I going to take some picture that was 65 years old, I don't know, 14, 15 years old? I'm looking at the picture. I see the picture. Somebody sent it to me right away. And I said, okay, all right, what is this? And I'm looking at the picture. Jerry's sitting in the back. And it was in Arkansas back in, I don't know, 65, 56, 57, whenever that was. Everybody in the South was a certain way back in those days. That's just what it was. Everybody in the South was a certain way. I don't see Jerry at the front of that line like I see that dude with it. You see that dude with a cigarette
in his mouth.
Oh, God. Right? But Jerry looked like a curious 14, 13-year-old kid that was looking. And you know, his face didn't look like he was there for battle. Not like the cigarette dude. He didn't look like that. So that's just kind of how I took it, man. We can go on a picture. You can make a picture do whatever you want it to do. You can make it say whatever you want it to say.
It's not true.
Or you can ask all the African-Americans that have been around Jerry Jones what's their thought, what's their opinion, guys like me. And none of them will tell you who he is right with what you see over there or what people trying to make that picture. That's all I can say about it. You know what I'm saying? That's all I can say about it.
So, Gina, here's the subtext and why it's funny. Michael Irvin played for the Cowboys, only the Cowboys.
Okay.
He's like a company man to this day. He's a loyalist. He loves the Cowboys. It's almost kind of like his persona. And the fact that he's fawning over Jerry Jones in this context is like, what the fuck else is Michael Irvin going to say? He's a company man. He's a Cowboy guy.
Yeah. No, but
he's not wrong necessarily. But that the humor of it is he's never going to say.
Yeah, he's going to defend the Cowboys.
Yeah, he'll never.
Yeah. On the other hand, it's another nothing burger, and I'm sure Jerry Jones and he got along because he was the touchdown. He was a playmaker, man.
Won three Super Bowls.
But I'd feel remiss if we left this picture without pointing out, you know, the cigarette guy in front's scary. The guy behind him is way scarier. Anyone in a serious situation who starts laughing or smiling or smirking to me is way scarier.
Yeah, it also.
Hey, what do we got here?
He's the toady henchman.
Exactly.
In the movie.
It's all. Michael Irvin makes a point, which is you can take a picture. It's always like when you watch political shows when they're doing a hit piece on one guy. You know, when they're talking shit about Joe Biden, it's a picture of him rubbing his eyes and looking down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When they're talking shit about Donald Trump, it's a picture of him bellowing like up
like
triple chin, spittle like flying out. And you go, look at him, look at him.
It always matches.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, because 2 seconds later, the guy with the cigarette with the scary look on his face could have changed his face, and then Jerry Jones could have looked angry.
He was there to escort them in. It was just a bad moment.
Anyway, this is, look, if this is what we got, then we're in pretty damn good shape. That's all I'm saying about racism. Also, wow, there's a really interesting article that I found that was written by... Oh, Dawson, I'll find.
Roland Fryer.
Who's Roland Fryer? We'll find that out. I think he's a man of color. That much I got from reading the article, but I'm not sure how well
American
I know
economist,
him.
American economist, professor at Harvard.
All right. And a man of color in his, I don't know, 60s yes. or something like that?
45.
Oh, he's a younger guy. All right, let me hit Simply Safe, and then we'll get into this very poignant article. Simply Safe. Oh, home should be where the family feels safest, especially over the holidays this season. Give them the gift of protection with the number one rated home security system. Right now, Simply Safe is offering my listeners 40% off a new security system. These guys are great. They've been with us for a million years. We all use their product. You can set it up yourself in about a half hour. You go online. You order the system that fits your home or even your apartment or condo. Named Best Home Security System of 2022 by U.S. News and World Report. Third year in a row, 24/7 professional monitoring costs under $1 a day. Less than half the price of traditional home security systems. And they have an app now. You can arm, you can disarm, you can unlock for a guest who's coming by, access cameras or adjust system settings anytime, anywhere. It's Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Don't miss your chance to save big on our favorite security system. Get 40% off any new system at simplysafe.com/Adam today. That's simplysafe.com/Adam. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
All right, a very important and poignant article to share. And we'll do that right after this. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Hey, Corolla Drinks fans. We've got a special anniversary coming up. November marks the 10-year anniversary of Mangria. To celebrate this milestone and, more importantly, the support that the fans have given us, we're excited to announce each and every bottle of Mangria and 33 wines during the month of November is $10 only. That's right. Head to CorollaDrinks.com and get your bottles for only $10. The holidays are coming. Thank you so much for supporting us over the past decade. It really means the world to us. We love you guys. Happy holidays from all of us at Corolla Drinks.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Corolla Show. Dateline, Fort Wayne, Indiana. A 79-year-old man is facing 48 years in prison after setting fire to multiple used car dealerships. The man was upset. The dealership sold him, quote, a lemon of a Jeep in 1986. The man started fires by cutting a hole in the roof of a 2008 Pontiac Solstice convertible and throwing in a road flare. Definitely not a Jew.
Wow. Leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, for sure.
Hold the grudge.
All right. You know, the other thing that's especially problematic about the time we're living in is once somebody like the elderly Duchess gets inquisitive with the Nubian warrior, we all have to dump on her because there's precedent. There's Sharon Osbourne defending
Piers Morgan.
There's Chris, what's his name, from The Bachelor, defending bachelorette. Yeah. And they got shit canned post-haste. So not only have we learned that there is no defending or explaining or attempting to do any of that because you shall be dethroned yourself. All right. Roland Fryer is one of the top economists in the world and is a recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship, which is a genius grant. And at age 30, became the second youngest professor and youngest African-American to ever receive tenure at Harvard. Wow. And Bloomberg appointed him NYC's chief equity officer. Okay. So he has thoughts. And I will share them with you, or Dawson will.
From the Wall Street Journal Opinion. Disparity doesn't necessarily imply racism. I was raised in part by my maternal grandmother, a phenomenal black woman born in 1925 who came of age during Jim Crow, attended Bethune-Cookman University in the early 1940s, and experienced both the promise and limitations of the civil rights era when integrating schools in Florida in 1969.
Over Jerry Jones's dead body, I'll tell you that.
She did her best to teach sixth graders subject-verb agreement minutes after being spat on by their parents. Her life's journey provided unlimited content as we sat together for nearly three decades, stuck to the plastic slipcovers on her sofa, playing cards, drinking sweet tea, and talking uninhibitedly about race in America. The first discussion I can remember happened in 1988 when I was 11, after a visit to McDonald's. After ordering, my grandmother paid with a crisp $20 bill from her pocketbook, and the cashier put the change directly on the counter. When we got to the parking lot, she was incensed. "You see that? White woman didn't want to touch me." I had noticed it too, but thought the cashier was being nice, trying to avoid passing on her own germs. My grandmother, no doubt based in part on her experiences, saw racism everywhere, in every inequity, every statistic. Racial differences in wages, racism. Racial differences in educational achievement, racism. Racial differences in teen birth rates, racism. This sort of casual empiricism, which has crept back into mainstream media and other institutions, was a competitive sport among my family and friends. "Did you see the way that white woman tightened her grip on her purse because I was behind her? Does this guy follow everyone around the store?" A decade after the McDonald's incident, in graduate school, I read a 1995 paper titled "The Role of Pre-Market Factors in Black-White Wage Differences." Using a nationally representative sample of more than 12,000 14 to 17-year-olds from 1979, Derek A. Neal and William R. Johnson estimated that blacks earned between 35% to 45% less than whites on average. They examined how much of the wage gap could be attributed to present-day discrimination in the workplace versus differences in skill as measured by the Armed Forces Qualification Test, a cousin of the ACT and SAT. Importantly, they weren't trying to measure the effect of America's racist history running back to the early 17th century, when the first African slaves were brought to work the tobacco farms of Virginia. Only the extent to which blacks earn lower incomes because employers today make racially discriminatory decisions. Nor did they focus on prejudice more broadly. They ignored that my grandmother was spat on in the parking lot at work and concentrated on whether she was treated fairly once she entered the building. "We find," they wrote in the abstract of their paper, "that this one test score explains all of the black-white wage gap for young women and much of the gap for young men." With their approach, anti-black bias played no role in the divergent wages among women. A black woman with the same qualifications as a white woman made slightly more money, and it accounted for at least 29% of the racial difference among men, with 71% traceable to disparate performance on the AFQT. The AFQT itself was evaluated by the Pentagon, which found that black and white military recruits with similar AFQT scores performed similarly on the job, including no racial bias. The paper felt like an attack on what I knew, an assault on all those conversations with my grandmother, which taught me that racism, present tense racism, dictated black-white inequality. I told myself that Messrs. Neal and Johnson, both of whom were white, were probably bigots, and I set out on a mission to disprove their work. I vented about my battle with Neal and Johnson to a fellow graduate student at Penn State, a white guy from the cornfields of southern Illinois. He was no more at home at a top 25 economics doctoral program than I was, and we spent a fair amount of time together during our first year, staring at Euler equations in our favorite textbook, Recursive Methods in Economic Dynamics. I told him I was sure discrimination was a bigger factor than Neal and Johnson were letting on, but I just can't get this data to cooperate. He asked why I was so convinced, And I erupted in a rant about the prevalence of racism and recognizing bigots on sight. My grandmother would have nodded rhythmically along. My friend responded with a burst of loud, sharp laughter in my face. He pointed out how far I was straying from our Euler equations, how on any subject other than race, I would have never given in to such sloppy thinking. The double identity, a classically trained economist taught to tease out casual relationships, and a black Southern boy that discriminated is ubiquitous. And a black Southern boy taught that discrimination is ubiquitous had lived seamlessly inside me until that moment.
Oh, there it is.
Neil and Johnson, as it turned out, aren't bigots, and their conclusions have stood the test of time and my attempts to disprove them. I extended their analysis to unemployment, teen pregnancy, incarceration, and other outcomes, all of which follow the same pattern. Moreover, the relationship between skills and wages have been confirmed by study after study, even when using different data and methods. Kevin Lang, an economist at Boston University, corrects important issues in Neil and Johnson's work, but finds the same relationship between AFQT scores and wages. Taken together, an honest review of the evidence suggests that racial inequities are more a result of differences in skill than differences in treatment of those with the same skill. I write this with some degree of trepidation, in part because I still have my grandmother in my ear, and in part because I am keenly aware of the harm in underestimating bias. But there is also a cost to overemphasizing its impact. A black kid who believes he will face daunting societal obstacles is likely to underinvest in trying to climb society's rungs.
All right, let's stop for 1 second. This is the issue. Stop trying to talk people into the fact to create this apparatus that society's against them.
So because why bother?
They're not going to bother. Yeah. And we keep beating everyone over the head with this. I would argue, even if it exists in the proportions or amounts that you claim it exists, although when you hear systemic racism, if you ever ask them to say, will you tell me the policy? What are we talking about? Are we talking about schools? Are we talking about banks? Are we talking about fire departments, police departments? Like what is implemented? What is on the books? What can't we do here, or what exists? They'll never be able to answer that question. There's general racism will be the answer. But even if it existed, you would still be harming kids if you were saying to them any other mantra other than go out, bust your ass, work as hard as you can, do not worry. It will work for you. What we are doing and have been doing and continue to do is the exact opposite, which is why there's a gap between black and Asian, let's say, because we do not spoon feed that lie to Asians, or even if it's true, you're a minority. You're certainly a minority compared to blacks and Hispanics, but yet you go out and excel. So you're hurting the kids. Obviously, this is always the problem I've had with it. And you're generally making them angry and agitated because they have to walk around feeling like society has it in for them. And I know everyone who spoon feeds everyone this is considered a hero, which is part of the problem because we reward these people. We don't tell the chick at Buckingham Palace, oh, fucking knock it off and get on with your shit. We ask her if she's okay. We want to know if there's a lawsuit. We say, oh, poor dear. But keep going, Dawson. Sorry.
Every black student in the country needs to know that his return on investment in education is, if anything, higher than for white students. The solution is neither to stop fighting biased behavior nor to curb honest inquiry about race in America. We shouldn't stop searching for and penalizing discriminatory employers, or trying to reduce racial differences in police brutality, or estimating whether the value of a home appraisals depends on the race of the homeowner, or reducing bias in bail decisions by using artificial intelligence. I could go on, like the conversations stuck to those slipcovers. The solution isn't to look away from discrimination. It does exist, but we can't point at every gap in outcomes and instantly conclude it's racism. Prejudice must be measured rigorously, statistically. Disparity doesn't necessarily imply racism. It may feel omnipresent, but it isn't all-powerful. Skills matter most.
Well, there you go. Can we get LeBron James on board with this? Or
too much money's at stake.
Try to fuck up another generation of young black people.
And this is how the two takeaways I take from this guy are, this is how I know he's 100% right, because I believe him. A, he said, I did everything I could to disprove this because I know, because I was there, couldn't be done. B, he lists, is it perfect? Does this represent all of society? No. We need to improve here, 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 here. But in this case, it doesn't add up. Yeah.
It was interesting, too, how the roommate basically, or the classmates or whatever he was, basically pointed out the confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Which is, if this was any other subject, you would be just like your center fielder example. You're neutral, ready to go either direction where the data led you. But he was so doggedly, at the time, determined to, like you say, disprove or whatever.
Yeah, it's become a bit of a religion amongst, ironically, mostly atheists, and it just is. And when you can hear it in debates, if you hear people debate these subjects and they talk about numbers and they talk about, you know, employment, they talk about whatever, and at some point they'll corner the person who's arguing the other side, and the person will always end up going, are you saying there's no racism? That's their always sort of go-to, which nobody with a straight face could say no, but I'm also saying it doesn't factor in nearly the amount that you, and we have, I mean, are there enough, do we not have enough in 2022 of implementation of businesses going, If you're a Fortune 500 company and you're trying to exist in 2022 in the United States, all things being equal and test scores and experience and everything else, you are hiring the black person before the white person simply because we have set it up now that we are going to check the ledger and see what the percentage of women, the percentage of minorities, and whatever. We have set it up. I mean, obviously, the Asians are taking it hard because they are being discriminated against, certainly in the UC system, but many, many colleges around the country.
I can't imagine there's a single Fortune 500 company that doesn't have like a DEI policy, inclusivity, whatever. Like, there'd be difficult to imagine these days.
It doesn't exist. Now, in the face of that, you'll notice that it's being ratcheted up. So as I always say, as it sort of wanes and we get away from the Jerry Jones era, you'll now hear more talk and more complaints and more, again, it's Jerry Jones or it's the Duchess of Windsor over there. Is that, what are we even talking about? Right. All right, zero burgers. Also, the thing it drives me nuts is I was watching the Monday Night Football. I think it was Monday Night Football, but in the end zone is the big end racism, which, first off, the NFL doesn't care. Secondly, they're just trying to, you know, placate I don't know who. But first off, it suggests that it is a problem.
To end.
This is a field that has 87% black people on it, and average pay is $7.3 million, and yet we have to, and majority white people cheering them on up in the stands, but we have to paint this everywhere. And my thing is if you're going to paint this everywhere, then we have a problem. And if it doesn't exist, we have now created it, and it's ingrained. And this is, you're 9 years old, when I was 9 years old, if I was sitting home watching the Colts play and I saw end racism in the end zone, I'd go, well, evidently there's
a problem.
You wouldn't use the word evidently, but probably because there's a problem.
All signs point to
a problem. All right. So we got maybe some phone calls, but we also got Casey Anthony.
We've got to talk about this.
Yes. So I don't know much about the case. I didn't know much about the case because I do not get sucked into such folly. Now, you can go, there's a two-year-old dead. A two-year-old died, dies every 14 minutes.
Are you saying two-year-olds don't die?
They die.
I'm actually with you on this. Well, I did not know when we talked about her yesterday if she had been initially found guilty or not guilty. I had no idea.
She does not seem like a great person. We can turn to our barometer of all things logical, which is Rosie O'Donnell.
This was
a
bombshell.
We can see what she thought. She thought about it. I can just tell by her expression she's not happy about this three-part series.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm in my car, and I'm thinking about Casey Anthony. I watched that whole documentary, and I believe her father did it.
Whoa. Oh.
I do. Now, when I started watching that documentary, I thought, there's no way in hell that this girl is innocent. And I changed my mind. Listen, it kind of made sense to me what she was saying. And I believed her. And everyone said she was a great mom. I don't know. I know this is going to be a controversial opinion. Because I went on, you know, when I first was started watching it, I made a TikTok last night. And I was like, you know, come on, who's she kidding? And everybody was agreeing with me saying, yeah, she's guilty. I would never watch that. She's making money on that. But what an amazing, amazing documentary. Truly one of the best ones in I've seen in a long time. It was riveting. And I think it might change people's opinions. If you can go in with an open mind.
Can we pause for a second? Is there any hard out for TikTok? Or they just give you like 7 days
here
to talk?
Good question. Phil. I thought they were faster.
I thought they were like snippets. I didn't know they were long form.
Go long. Yeah, you can go long. You go a few minutes, yeah.
Oh, okay. Do we need more, Rosie?
No,
or we get it?
That's pretty much
it. That was the end, actually.
So she thinks the dad did it.
Yeah.
So
did you watch the same
thing? Watched 2 out of 3 of them so far.
The nuts and the bolts are the daughter, Casey.
Kaylee.
Kaylee.
The baby.
I don't like, see, I'm, I already got the Casey and the Kaylee, and I'm already lost.
Kaylee's the baby.
Right. So Kaylee was found in an above ground pool.
Oh. Wait, I thought it was a tub. Maybe I wasn't watching close enough.
I didn't watch the doc, but I got the lowdown from one of the lackeys out in the hall.
Oh, maybe.
And they said found in an above ground pool.
Okay. Maybe I was playing too much Candy Crush.
Which is...
Is this a white trash thing where we're not quite sure if it's a pool or a tub?
A cowboy tub.
Or like a cloth-footed tub that you put outside.
Oh, yeah.
I was told above ground pool,
which
would be...
Sure.
A 2-year-old would have to work a little bit to get into above ground pool. Oh, I guess they could, but it seems like, I don't know. Vito, what do we got?
So she was found in the woods or like in a wooded area.
Right.
But they say she drowned in an above ground pool.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
But she wasn't just she was found duct taped.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And nobody called this in.
Why was there duct tape in the pool?
That's a great question. Nobody called this in for 30 days.
Right.
And the child was found duct taped. So.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of accident you get in if you're doing just, you pin the tail on the donkey and you can't find a blindfold.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Now, we all have, and they do this thing where it's like Casey Anthony was partying during this time period. I don't know. It's kind of neither here nor there for me. Young chicks party. I don't like the optics of it, but I also look at it the other way, which is if you murdered your daughter and you're trying to get away with it, would you party?
Right. Yeah. But I think you might be looking at this like a sane person.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 2 episodes that I watched, this is somebody, and I think Nancy Grace was right about the crocodile tears. She really turns them on and off. And not just facially, but so much of her reminded me of a cross between Alyssa Milano and Amber Heard on The Stand. There was a lot. There was a lot of deja vu when I was watching her. So, and then there's like clips of her calling from jail and being like, "What the fuck, mom? You're not on my fucking side. You're telling the news that I could have fucking did it, you fucking bitch." And she's like, "I don't know, honey. I don't know what's going on." Well, fuck you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just, it's not. I mean, and can the dad be a complete piece of shit? Totally. That's possible. I don't know him. But she's basically saying that he fucking killed her and molested her and molested Casey. So that's a lot
I feel like Rosie's got some dude issues, so she might be more easily swayed over to the dad side, especially once you start hearing about abuse or sexual abuse. So, okay.
Maybe, you know, Casey Anthony was out there. She was partying. She was getting some dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Rosie's like, I can get in there.
She wants to hang.
Yeah, she really wants
to hang. She's newly divorced.
I didn't think of it like that.
Plausible. Yeah.
Did you, what did you walk away from? What opinion? What do you think? Is dad involved?
I don't know if they really bring it home on the third episode, which I haven't watched. But first of all, the point of, I think, this documentary that Casey's so involved in is to make her look innocent. Yes? That's part of it? Okay. The dad seems like he could be an asshole, but I don't see him as a murderer. I see her as somebody who is potentially has a chemical imbalance. Like lying comes very easily to her. Mm-hmm. She lies about everything. And she says like, yeah, do I lie a lot? Yeah. So maybe, I don't know, is it a sociopathy? Could she not feel regret and remorse?
Did she say anything about not contacting the police in those 30 days?
Again, I'm not done yet, but she said like she's basically like her parents are the puppet masters and she was just falling victim to anything they told her to do, which was like keep quiet. And she blamed it on this poor woman that she said was the nanny and Fernandez Gutierrez.
Yeah.
This woman was not the nanny. She's like a neighbor or something and pinned it on her. She was the nanny was the last person I saw with her. And this is all fucking lies. It's all bullshit. She goes, did I lie to the cops over and over again? Yes, I did. Did I kill my kid? No, I did not.
Well, let's put it through my simulator here, which is I always say if somebody, you know, you have to just do a thought experiment, which is what you're saying did happen. Mm-hmm. You know, this was my OJ, I never killed my wife thing. If any of you were accused of killing your spouse, you wouldn't go, I have no comment, or we'll let the court sort it out.
I'll be in Chicago.
You would scream into as many microphones as you could. This is insane. There's a killer out there on the loose. I don't even know what you guys are doing.
Why are we wasting our time here?
Right.
Be careful what you print because you shall be sued when we find the killer.
Right.
And so on and so forth. You wouldn't be like kind of no comment or I don't know about that. And then there's also this kind of weird nether world that always gets confusing with these things where they go like, well, Adam, he's saying he didn't kill his wife, but he did have several mistresses.
Yeah.
And he did buy a lot of duct tape and zip ties, and he did Google how does one kill their wife,
but
he still didn't kill. But like, could you imagine if Dr. Drew was accused of killing his wife and you looked into it, you wouldn't find a bunch of stuff where he sort of kind of killed his wife, but not really, but we don't really know.
Will do was scrolled across the wall.
Yes, this like kind of thing where it's an act. If it was an act that happened and you had nothing to do with it, then the answer would be, if you're OJ, it'd be, I don't own Bruno or Molly shoes. I don't own a knife. I was hitting putts in my living room, and then the town car came around. I went to LAX. That's what do you want from me?
Yeah.
I was snooping around the house a little bit. I mean, so there's like all these weird stories of like, I didn't kill my wife, But I did ground up prescription medication and put it in her oatmeal. Yes, but that was just to relax her.
I
drew her a bath. Yes, that is true. And I did turn the light off when I left the bathroom, but I did not put my hands. It's like, well, how come all these people that didn't kill anyone sort of half did something?
Right. Yeah. And another confusing element, which I had to stop and ask my husband, like, did I miss something? He's, nope, that's exactly what happened. There's a lot of talk about her being an abuse survivor as a kid by the hands of her father. But then she says, like, and I'm not quoting this, you know, perfectly, but it was something like, and it wasn't until I was put in jail that I feel like I may have had a memory of maybe being abused. And I was like, oh, wait. I don't know exactly how all this works, but you went from I am an abuse survivor because this happened to it dawned on me while I was cooling my heels in jail that maybe I too was abused. And I'm like, well, what are we doing? I'm confused.
Mom, when I was 10, wouldn't drive me to Teddy Lewis's house in Van Nuys, and it's seared into my brain.
Shut the fuck up.
I know exactly where I was when that news came out of my mother's bedroom.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'm not saying you can't have a recovered memory, but it just that's one example of a story that was very hard to follow.
I know we've given it a title, recovered memory. Don't you feel like if your neighbor had sex with you or your dad dropped a digit onto you, I don't feel like I'd have to recover that one. I feel like it'd be front center. Yeah. I mean, we've had good things. Oh. We've had bad things. Brian Bishop. Not Brian. How far did you have to dig?
Top of mine.
Top.
I sat on that for all of 2 months. And the thing yesterday with Nancy Grace, I think it was, they said that Casey was abused from age 8 to 10 or 8 to 12. That's not one incident you bury. That's ritualistic abuse.
Right.
All right. We have a caller, Josh from Texas, who has an idea. Josh?
Yes, sir.
Where do you live in Texas?
Big Spring.
Oh!
Out in West Texas, out in the middle of nowhere.
You know the Mendelsons?
The Mendelsons. That name does sound familiar, but I can't put a finger on it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll check the mailboxes when you drive to work tomorrow. What's going on? You have thoughts on Casey Anthony?
Yeah, I watched the documentary last night. You know, I still, even after watching it, and to me, it's clearly an attempt to make her look innocent. I get it. I think Peacock found a way to get her to talk and get all the eyes on them, and I do think that there was a bit of a, you know, hey, we're going to let you tell your story. We're going to let you get your ideas out there. But, you know, the whole theory of the dad doing it, and, you know, I agree with everything y'all just got done saying about the, you know, oh, I had a thought in jail about abuse and all that. You know, if it's from 8 to 12, it wasn't just an isolated incident. I don't think it's something you would bury that deep to forget it. But a lot of the evidence that points to her that just really can't be disputed, she didn't have an answer for, but had hypothetical answers for, like the computer search for how to make chloroform. You know, they said it was from her password protected account on her computer, and the police said that they had cell phone records and pings proving that she was home at that time, and her dad was at work. Well, her whole theory to debunk that was, my dad only worked 5 minutes away, so he could have came home and done it too. And, you know, they never followed up and said, well, you were home. So did he come home? You know, did you see him come do that? It was just like, oh, no, he could have easily just come in and did it. And I almost just felt like they glossed over it and thought, oh, well, we'll just take her for a word. Then, yeah, he could have done it. There's more evidence towards him doing it right there. But I just feel no matter how much they tried to push that, there's just so many facts and evidence that point towards the mom. You know, you're out partying for 30 days, and I also agree with you on that. Young women party, that's kind of what they do. But she got a tattoo on her back that translates to the good life.
Bella
and
Vita.
She said on the documentary that that was a fuck you to her parents. Well, okay, if your daughter's missing and you don't know where she is and they don't know where she is at the time, why are you putting that on your body? Why are you sending weird, you know, subliminal messages to your parents through tattoos? It just all kind of reeks of
narcissism.
Hey, Josh, disorder. I got a job for you, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this. we are not going to be able to try this case in the court of public opinion with a bunch of yentas drinking rosé and screaming at the TV set.
That's true.
The only way to figure this out is we got to get a bunch of guys like you, Josh, who have no interest in this and did not watch it the first time around and are not invested in it in any way. We can't take middle-aged women drinking rosé and screaming at the TV set because they're in one way or another. They know what they know. Yes.
You know what we need? 12 angry men.
12.
We either got it at the ballpark or the ball game tickets, bring a hole in his pocket.
Right. And you're going, you got to watch this doc. And they're going, oh, fuck. Who gives a shit about this? Yeah. My ex-wife was tied up in this shit. And that's why I divorced her 10 years ago. No, no. Sit down and watch this shit. That'll be an unbiased, facts-based group of clear thinkers who are not biased and don't have any predetermined thoughts on it, forced to watch it. And when those 12 guys render a decision, that'll be good enough for me.
How say you, Josh?
I couldn't agree more. That sounds like a better idea than anything else I've heard from it, because you're absolutely right. It's, if you just take exactly 12 people that have no interest in it, that are pissed off that they're having to watch it anyway, all you have to do is just see the fact of, well, why didn't she tell the police? Well, she told them she worked here. Well, what did they do when they went there? Oh, she lied and said, oh, okay, you know, you caught me, I don't work here. Well, you know, where'd you take your daughter? Oh, I took her to this apartment complex. Okay, well, there's no one living in there. Oh, yeah, I lied about that, too. I didn't take her here either. I mean, they gloss over all of that, and they almost just kind of presented it to you in like a, yeah, she did this, but forget about that. Let's talk about what she has in her head. And it's like, well, I kind of see what she has in her head.
All
right. I don't think
so you'd come down on guilty.
Get to work, Josh.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna be contacting you.
Hey, you do that.
And you're going to be sequestered for a number of weeks while we go through this.
I'll be out looking for mailboxes with names on them.
Yeah, the Mendelsons.
Right.
I'll be looking. What town are you in again?
Big Spring.
They're out there.
Yeah.
They're in Little Spring.
I'll go looking.
Yeah. Should be a big plastic menorah should be hitting the lawn in the next couple of weeks, so that you'll be able to find them.
A blow-up mensch on the bench.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the only way we're going to solve this. We can't go to Rosie. We can't go to Nancy Grace. They're already
they're
in.
They
know what they know.
Yeah.
That's it. But again, that thing where it's like, if something happened to one of my kids, it'd just be, my answer would be, I had nothing to do with it. I go out and look for whoever did this. I wouldn't be, then Adam went to the brothel and maxed out his credit cards and got a tattoo and then lied to the cops about where he was the night before. Like,
the tattoo says, at long last, kid free.
Right. Like, there would just be whatever my life was.
Right.
It wouldn't be a long string of lies to authorities.
Exactly. And again, as Josh said and as I said, lying comes effortlessly to her, so just take that with you when you watch it.
All right, the great Tia Carrera is going to join us. I'm looking down on this elaborate list of accolades, and everyone kind of remembers Wayne's World for sure, but True Lies, man.
Fantastic.
Do not sleep.
She was great. Movie's great.
She was great. Do not sleep on that performance.
And Easter Sunday with Joe.
Oh, wait, what is that?
We're at the very top.
Joe Coy.
Oh, Easter Sunday. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Easter Sunday with Joe Coy. Yeah, sorry.
Maybe she can give us the real dirt on Joe.
Uh-huh. I'm sure he's quite a diva on set. That's right. Easter Sunday as well. All right. We'll take ourselves a quick break. We'll be back with Tia Carrera right after this.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.